Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Hello, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Hello, Rob DeMillo. How's it going?
It's good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. I'm considering a move to Arizona.
I'm sorry?
Because of State Bill 1341, the Arizona revised statute that would make Bitcoin legal tender in Arizona.
Oh, jeez.
go read the entire bill, because unlike most bills, it's 22 lines long. So it won't take you but a minute. And it basically says the definitions of legal tender in Arizona will be pretty much anything the U.S. says is legal tender. There's three lines about that. Line four, Bitcoin, period. Then there's a line after that that defines Bitcoin. Bitcoin means decentralized peer-to-peer digital currency in which a record of transactions is maintained on the Bitcoin blockchain. What's hilarious about this too is this was introduced by Senator Rogers, but only one senator, not Senator Rogers, is on record supporting it yet. Brock Wilson.
Brock Wilson, the actor?
I don't know. Maybe.
does he not know? Does Wilson not know what Bitcoin is?
Or yeah, maybe he knows too well. It's one or the other, right?
Yeah, it's one or the other. Yeah.
Or are they talking about the poker? One
Bitcoin equals $1, right?
I'm fascinated by this. Will never go anywhere. Arizona's not going to make Bitcoin legal tender. But so what did Senator Rogers get out of introducing this bill? Like, Bitcoin. And what did Brock Wilson get out of just voluntarily stepping forward and registering support on the record before anybody else?
Any voters that voted for Rogers would vote for Wilson, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, there
would this be one of those things defeat a notion?
Is there what?
Is this one of those things maybe where they preemptively defeat a motion? Like you introduce something like this early so that it can get shot down so that you can use that later on.
Oh, you mean that's
ammunition?
Why Rogers hasn't supported it because he wants it to? Yeah, maybe. I doubt it, though.
No, that's interesting.
You know, policy shaping.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. I don't know that.
Are you saying is it a trial balloon for something else, you think?
Well, because sometimes they'll introduce legislation as a to use as
it's
ammunition.
It's
pretty
rare that happens, but it does happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking particularly in that state's case, what exactly advantage are, maybe there's something I don't see because
you limit
not,
the debate. That maneuver that he's describing is a way to stop the debate from causing people to get behind it and give the bill momentum and turn an unpopular bill into a bill that's popular. You just kind of rule it out right from the top. You kill it in the grave. In the grave? No, in the cradle.
In the cradle.
You take the cradle.
Grave
is
too
you put
late.
The cradle and the bathwater in the grave, I think is how that
Yes.
Cradle to the Grave was a good movie.
the Hand That Rocks the Cradle was also a good
It was, yeah. What do you think Rebecca De Mornay is doing right now?
She's buying Bitcoin in case it becomes legal tender in Arizona.
Of course
she's
re-watching
The Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
Possibly just sitting there with a small glass of gin, watching herself in Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
A small glass of gin.
It's just a I used to be a thing.
Probably, yeah.
No, we offended all the Rebecca De Mornay.
Hi, Rob. How are you?
Hi, Sarah. Are you chilly?
Do I seem chilly? I am chilly.
Look a little.
Yeah. My studio is chilly in the winter months, but yeah, I don't know. I'm very chilly today.
These guys saw this, but check it out.
Ooh, nice.
That'll warm you right up. A little DTS
beanie.
Sure
will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't I have one of those? I need to get one of those.
My
kids took
the way Rob got one was telling me the same thing. So maybe that's all you need to do.
Tom, I'm dying out here.
I mean, you have David Michael's email too. You just emailed. Yeah. The way you get one, Sarah, is dailytechnewsshow.com/store.
You know what? I'm going to.
Unless you work for the show, in which case that would be silly and we'll just send you money.
I love a good beanie. When we thank our top patrons, you know, over the years, I noticed that my mother is only a few people down the list because she is a top contributor to ATNS.
Oh, so we're getting close to you thanking Linnell Lane,
your mom for her lifetime support. Wait,
so let me
great.
Ask you, would you say Linnell or would you say, thanks, Mom?
I mean, she's Linnell. Both? Yeah, I mean,
you want the rest of the audience
both
to know.
Work.
Yeah, get full credit.
Yeah. Yeah, I was sort of like, oh, did not even realize that. Thanks,
that's
Mom.
Great. I love that.
It's very mom, you know.
Your mom
it's
rocks.
Just what moms do.
Well, now yeah, I know you're out
does.
There. You rock.
You do, Mom. You rock.
I need to come visit when it's safe again and say hi.
Yeah, it would be fun. It would be fun.
I don't say that just because I want your mom to make pie when I visit. That's not. I don't know why you would even suggest that. That was
wait. There's pie.
Oh, my mother makes pie every summer and then freezes like a multitude of pies that go into the freezer in the garage.
Oh,
not you know because you don't want to disturb the regular freezer.
No.
You just want to put it in the pie freezer.
Yeah.
There is always pie.
Had respect for that.
Bodies. You put the bodies in the garage freezer.
Under the pie.
Well, yeah.
Oh, no.
Bodies
no, no.
and pie.
You put the body in the neighbor's yard.
Mincemeat pie, different feel.
Yeah, never.
But effective.
Tell me about this mincemeat.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. It's really good.
I'll stick to fruit things.
Who was it?
Yeah. Yeah. Who did you wrong, Mom?
You can't prove anything.
Not now. You ate my pie.
Wait, what was I watching? Oh, I wish I talked about this with Len yesterday. I won't spoil anything, but Len Peralta had told me you have to watch the show Dead to Me, which I hadn't watched until recently. And I sort of went back into the, I think it's a Showtime show. I don't really remember. Or maybe Hulu. Yeah. I don't know. With Christina Applegate and others. It's really good. It's really good. But it's very much, it's very much like one of those, like, whodunit, you know, what are we going to do? It's crazy.
Nice.
You know, murder, mystery kind of thing.
Fun.
Yeah, it's a good show.
What's it on?
I don't remember.
I think I think you're right. I think it is. It's either Showtime or Netflix, maybe?
Actually, it's Netflix.
Is it Netflix?
It is. Yeah, because I remember the opening and closing now. But yeah, good show.
If you want to keep with the freezer theme, you can also watch Resident Alien.
I love people talking about Resident Alien it comes back. It's getting a little momentum, I feel like.
Oh, it's it is pretty amazing.
I don't know. I've always been kind of on the fence with Alan Tudyk.
Why?
What about him?
Roger, did somebody do you wrong?
Yeah, like, I mean, you're the only person I've ever heard to say that. Like, you know what? I don't like him. Something about him isn't right.
strawberry ice cream. You know, that gives me gas. No.
Just any noun. Just throw any noun out.
Puppies.
Puppies. What do you think about puppies?
Who needs them?
I'm sorry. That was just funny because everybody was, we were talking about just how everybody loves Resident Alien. And Roger's like, I thought you were going to say, like, I don't know. I watched that. It wasn't very good. And you're like,
I was like, I thought of Resident Evil. That's different.
Oh, that's much different.
Very different.
I don't think Alan Tudyk is in that.
I don't
want to
watch that.
Yeah.
It's much different.
Is the Resident Alien like an alien who comes to your house and is like, hello,
think of Northern Exposure and then drop Alan Tudyk as an alien in the middle of it.
Yeah, like an illegal space alien that drops in.
And he's a doctor.
Well, now.
Oh.
Right.
Well, I mean, that's part of his story. That?
Well, how many legal space aliens do we have?
I don't know. How many have
we
seen?
We don't know.
We just turned this Twitch channel into a whole different show. How many aliens do we have? Is the real question, folks. Open your eyes.
Show.
Yeah. I mean, who on this panel might be a space alien? You're not going to tell us if you are.
I got it from DTNS to Dan's. Dan's. That just sounds like a hair salon. Welcome to Dan's.
Or a coffee shop.
Or dance studio. Dan's.
Which ties into Tom's mug.
Dan's as in as belonging to Dan?
Like D-A-N-S, like Daily Alien News Show.
Daily Alien News Show.
I mean, there are a lot of Dans out there who,
pivot.
But
running small businesses.
Roger, I know we're trying to expand content here on the Subrilliant Network, but I don't know if Daily Alien News Show is necessarily where we want to go.
We would just hire
That's what an alien would say.
Aha! We hire people named Dan to host it.
Done.
I mean, I'm a fan of Dan's.
Yeah. Well, good Dan.
In fact, I can't think of a Dan I don't like.
We already have one Dan.
There's that one Dan.
Yeah. We get Dan Campos to host along with several other Dans.
Just a series of Dans.
Maybe some Danas.
The fictional Dan Martell from yesterday.
Dan Martell. Yes.
We were trying to remember yesterday.
We know you're out there somewhere.
And it turned out we were trying to remember Dan Mitchell and Lindsay Martell, but we could only remember them as one name.
We made a composite of two different people.
That was my bad. Yeah.
That was funny.
I just did that with Frank Gwynn and Herman Munster.
Yeah.
Frank Munster.
Monster.
Well, anyway, Sarah, Tom, you missed it at the very beginning. Arizona has a bill pending to make Bitcoin legal tender in Arizona.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
No one is going to support it, mind you. But
well, some people will.
Wilson. Senator Brock Wilson has already gone on record supporting it. So, yeah, you're right. Somebody will. And now we know who it is.
Oh, boy.
There's been a lot of topics on today's pre-show. You know, these would all make good titles.
Oh, right. Yeah, we were gonna tell people that, weren't we? Go to showbot.tv/DTNS2 and vote on titles. Right now it's GDI, so it's all GDI titles. Once DTNS starts, then people will start submitting the DTNS titles. But get in there and vote on them. You know, vote early. You can only vote once per IP address, but
oh, and 3 p.m. today, Los Angeles time, we're doing our StreamYard test.
Pacific,
so if you want
to time, it applies Pacific to the whole time zone. It's not
right, Los Angeles
time.
Pardon you,
Sarah. You know, we're like, excuse us.
You know who's in Los Angeles time? Alan Tudyk.
Anyway, so 3 p.m. You were saying.
You can drop by our Twitch.
It would be great if Alan could join us.
That would be lovely.
You know, just to kind of plead his case.
Have you ever invited him?
We haven't.
I don't have her contact info.
What Roger is trying to say is at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, we're going to have an experimental stream, right?
Yes, StreamYard. So we just need a few people, but if the more the merrier, to give us feedback on what you see on the GDI Good Day Internet Twitch.
If you're watching or listening to this later, you missed it. I'm sorry. But if you're watching or listening live, swing on by.
But you know,
unless you're listening just a little bit late.
Right, right. I guess so. I guess there's a window in there, right?
I could listen to this in 2023 and I could do this?
No.
Well, no. Preferably by 2023, we would have had our you know, marbles in a bag. And
by 2023, it'll be the Dan's show. It'll be entirely
different. Hopefully.
Yeah. It'll be Dan's yard.
We'll have pivoted to alien coverage. I think we should start the show. What do you think?
Yeah.
I think that is a great idea.
Well, I don't know.
Aren't we doing a show? There's a show.
Let's start another one inside this one.
Every day we do this.
Like in
every day.
Should we start the show? I don't know. Should we?
Yeah.
We're all here. Well, yep.
Here we go.
It's a fine Swiss watch.
Coming up on DTNS, how's that pivot to services going for Apple, the state of battery swaps for EVs, and Google listened to us. OMG. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, January 28th, 2022 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
And joining us, Chief Technology Officer at Skidmore, Owings, and Roger didn't put the other part in
Merrill.
There. Merrill. Oh, it didn't line wrap. Roger put it in there. It didn't line wrap. It's Google Docs fault. Fix it, Google. Rob DeMillo, how are you? Good to have you here.
I'm good. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me again.
We were just talking about Arizona's pending bill to make Bitcoin legal tender with Rob on our longer version of the show, Good Day Internet. You can get that at patreon.com/DTNS.
Speaking of, big thanks to our top patrons today. They include Michelle Sergiu, Mike McLaughlin, and Miss Music Teacher.
Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
IDC reports that Samsung retook the number one spot for smartphone shipments in 2021 with 20% market share globally after shipping 272 million phones during the year. Apple was in the number two spot with 235.7 million shipped phones. Xiaomi took third place with 191 million. Oppo was next with 133.5 million. And Vivo after that in the top five spot with 128.3 million. Overall, companies shipped 1.35 billion smartphones in 2021. That's a 5.7% increase over the previous year, but supply chain issues continue to plague the entire sector. Counterpoint Research had slightly different overall numbers for the top five, but noted that this marks the first time the smartphone market has grown year over year since 2017.
Microsoft and 35 U.S. states, led by the state of Utah, filed amicus briefs with the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, supporting Epic Games in its appeal in its case against Apple. The states argue that the court should have applied Section 1 of the Sherman Antitrust Act to Apple, even in the case of a unilateral contract with developers, which prohibits, quote, every contract combination conspiracy in restraint of trade.
TechCrunch found FCC documents that show Joby Aviation is seeking permission to test its pre-production prototype vertical takeoff and landing aircraft over the San Francisco Bay near tourist spots. Joby told TechCrunch it's still securing permission and has no confirmed plans just yet.
WhatsApp's one of the most popular messaging apps in the world, but you might not know it to talk to some folks in the United States. Most of its 2 billion users are elsewhere. So WhatsApp is beginning a marketing push in the U.S. this weekend during the U.S. football playoffs this Sunday. Head of WhatsApp Will Cathcart told The Verge he also thinks the fact that WhatsApp works on iOS and Android will be appealing to people frustrated by the green bubble issues. Cathcart also said WhatsApp has no plans to support SMS or its more secure and feature-rich successor, RCS. All right, let's talk a little more about how we all won and convinced Google to change their mind. By we, I mean the entire internet, not just DTNS, but we'll take part of that W. Last week, we told you about the fact that people who had been using a version of G Suite that gave them Google services with domain names for free for more than a decade were finally being asked to pay or lose service by September of this year, a July deadline to make a decision, but they wouldn't actually lose service till September. And we all had different takes on whether we thought this was unfair or not, given the amount of time that people had to switch. Some people said, yeah, but they didn't give us enough warning, even if there was time. Still, we all generally agreed that since Google offers free services without domains, that maybe Google could offer a way to migrate people off the domain to the free without domain service, and that might be better. Give people the option to just lose the domain, not all of their data, if they can't afford the $6 to $18 per user month fees. Well, Google apparently listened. The support page for G Suite Legacy Free Edition users now says it will, quote, provide an option for you to move your non-Google Workspace paid content and most of your data to a no-cost option in the coming months. The support site says these options will be coming before you have to make a decision on July 1st, but will not include premium features like custom email or multi-account management. But it implies you'll have an option to keep things like your Google Play purchases, your movies, your music, etc., YouTube history, all that kind of stuff. If you log into your free account right now, and you're not a business, you got fewer than 10 users, you can take a survey to say, I'm not a business. And if you fill out that survey, it's a one question survey. There's two questions. The second question is it okay for us to use the information in the other question? If you fill out that survey, Google says it will send updates on more options for your non-business legacy account in the coming months. Now, one can assume a devil may lurk in those details, but hopefully after it gets enough surveys, Google will make those details apparent, and maybe it'll be an angel in the details.
Aw. Oh, man. Well, as somebody who is, I'm in limbo in this situation. I have a custom domain. I've been using G Suite for this for some time now. I think I probably set this up in 2005. I mean,
2006 is when they started. So you probably did it in 2006 then.
It was probably 2006. Feels like it was that long. Yeah, exactly. I was mildly worried about it. At the same time, it's sort of like, okay, you have until September. It's January. Okay. it's not like somebody said, you're going to get kicked off. You're not going to be able to read your SarahLane.com email starting tomorrow. That would be a much bigger deal. But Google, and I think, and especially we've gotten a lot of folks writing in saying, this would affect me and here's how I use it, and a lot of folks saying, and I have a family of 10 and we're all using this. And, if it was per, a cost per user per month, that's really going to add up. That's not tenable. Yeah. It's just me. $6 per month wouldn't probably make me, leave Google and figure something else out. I also don't know what else I would figure out that would be free at this point, but it's nice to know that Google is kind of saying, okay, I see how we're screwing a lot of people over potentially. And, we want to make sure that we're not alienating customers who will buy lots of other services from us.
Did you take the survey?
No.
Oh yeah. Did you take the survey?
Take the survey.
You should take the survey.
Well, okay. I will.
This is the era. This is the era of big companies blinking, by the way.
Yeah, right. Like, no kidding.
Like, we say that. What we really meant was, yeah, there's a lot of this.
And the reason I all joking aside, the reason everybody who's affected by this should take that survey, within the next few days, is that Google is probably going to tailor what they do based on how many people say, I need this, right? Because if it's 12, then they can do a whole different response than if it's several thousand, which is probably several thousand, if not more, right?
This is probably a ham-fisted attempt from Google to do cost recovery, right? Because they're just assuming that people that have domains attached to their Gmail accounts probably have small little businesses running, as opposed to vanity accounts and everything else. But it's all folks with vanity accounts are getting probably the most affected by this.
And those are the loudest, right? And I think Google underestimated how loud they would be. So that's why they're like, if you're not a business, we'll talk to you. We want to avoid the PR splash. So there you go.
Yeah. Very cool.
Well, earlier this month, on January 7th, to be exact, we talked about the U.S. ITC decision that Google infringed on 5 audio technology patents held by Sonos related to controlling a group of speakers. Google released ITC-approved redesigns to bring their products into compliance and avoid import bans. One of those changes meant that users have to adjust each speaker in a group's volume individually now. Not the end of the world, but annoying if you have a bunch of speakers in your house and you like to control them together. When we talked about it a few weeks ago, we said, So instead of paying Sonos a license, Google decided to remove functionality and asked if you thought that that was fair. Obviously, that ended up giving us quite a few responses. Rob, I think if I'm not mistaken, you're in the camp of no, that does not seem fair. And if you don't use Google speakers, you shouldn't get too comfortable because Sonos may target other speaker systems as well. Yeah. But let's start with Sonos versus Google and why you're not happy with the outcome.
So, well, aside from the fact that literally a week beforehand, I ripped out all the Sonos in my house and put Google speakers everywhere.
Google. So there was a little
powering the whole house.
Well, and why did you do that?
Because the Sonos, Sonos doesn't give you. So I've got, let me back up. I've got this longstanding thing of like, I repel against companies that have this siloed system that don't give me the option to expand to other things. And Sonos is one of those companies,
one of those,
right?
It's,
even though they produce really nice equipment, you have to get their equipment, right? I can't use my Bose things with, it's got to be a Sonos thing. So that was annoying. I got annoyed when Sonos, gurgled on the version 1 to version 2 version of the speakers. I didn't want to go through and refresh all the speakers in my house. I didn't want to remain on the old version of the product. So there's just a number of things that had bubbled up. And it's like, you know what? I don't need this. I'll pull the Sonos speakers out. I'll use Google AudioCast everywhere. And I can attach those to my regular speakers in the home. And plus it will pay attention to my voice and I can have podcasts like DTNS, like play over the speakers without too much difficulty. So all that stuff was working out really great. And then this thing happened, and I was like, well, seriously? And it is an inconvenience, of course, to, send audio to the whole home and have to like walk into the room that you want the volume to change at and go change that. But really there's something else fundamentally going on here. And it has to do with obvious versus non-obvious art in IP. And what I'd like to find out, and it's really hard to find out with all the media going on around this, is Sonos saying that Google specifically stole the actual code to do speaker control and other functionality. There's other functionality they're not telling us, right? So did they take the actual code or did they take the concept? If they took the concept, I call BS, right? If they took the code, sure. But that means that Google can code around it and do the code in a different fashion. And if it is the fact that Sonos is trying to claim obvious art, then the next in line would be Amazon, right? And you already hear rumblings on the internet about the Amazon Alexa service being the next target, right? So,
I mean, as somebody who I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Sonos speakers in my tiny little house, why not? But and I'm sort of committed to the platform at this point. But I echo quite a few of your sentiments, Rob, where this isn't ideal. I just find them to be superior speakers.
Yeah.
But I'm also using Amazon's service, we'll call her A for now, through all those Sonos speakers. And if there was any issue between the two companies, sure, I could figure out another option, but that would be extremely it would suck. It would suck.
This is one of those stories that I feel like in the broadest sense is minimally impactful just because there's not that many people who have Google speakers, there's a lot, but there, it's not a majority of the people that have them. And then of those people, how many people use it in the multi-home, enough that this causes a problem. But if you are, which you are, Rob, then that's highly annoying. So why doesn't Google just pay to license the patent? I mean, Sonos is being, unusually uncooperative, you would think they'd be able to come to an agreement.
Yeah, this is going to come out of it in one of two different ways, right? They're either going to do that. They're just going to like pony up the money and pay Sonos. They could also buy Sonos, by the way. Let's talk about that for a second too. Mm-hmm. Right? Let's like, that's the money that Google finds in their couch.
Sure.
Right. So they could do the same thing they did with Fitbit. Or they're, if it is a, you took our code during our, the period of cooperation that we had, and they can prove that that's what happened, then it's Google's got to just recode and then they'll be back online. So I think this is a temporary annoyance more than anything.
And usually these things are, right?
And usually these things are. But it's as we start to relinquish more and more of our services to cloud-based services, and as you two know, I'm a cloud guy, so I'm pro that. But until we start having regulations and legal mechanisms in place to prevent these larger companies from doing bait and switch on services, which is kind of what this is, it's tenuous steps forward. It's two steps forward, one step back, right? So...
Yeah. And Google, you know, very quickly worked around most of the issues. It's just the group volume thing that they couldn't come up with an immediate solution that satisfied
the
agency.
Well, it was that and the hardware control on the phone. Like I used to be able to just use my phone volume switch to control the volume in the house. But I noticed this morning it's back.
Yeah, they were able to work around that one. It's the group volume.
What were you doing? What did you have to do in the meantime?
You had to use the Google Home app. You had to actually
I see.
Volume and
got it.
Or walk up instead to the physical of the device.
Buttons. Yeah.
Which is hard
to do with the in-ceiling system that I have.
Well, we like getting feedback from folks. So thanks for the feedback on Sonos. Thanks to Rob for sharing the personal experience of there. Many of you and by many, I mean like three or four, but still several of you wrote in asking about battery swaps over the past few weeks. That's the idea that instead of recharging an electric vehicle on a road trip, say, you just pull into a place that'll take out your depleted battery, swap in a new one that's fully charged, and off you go. There are a lot of benefits to doing that besides just saving you time, because a lot of these battery swaps, you know, claim to be done in a couple minutes. You wouldn't have to worry about degrading batteries because you'd always have the latest battery tech in your car. That also means you might get improved range over the life of your car instead of decreased range from an aging battery. Now, people are doing this. Gogoro has done this with scooters for years. Scooters, of course, take much smaller batteries than a full-size vehicle. Tesla toyed around with the idea back in 2013. They spent 3 or 4 years on it, but the program stalled in 2016, and they never went back to it. China's NIO, or NIO, announced it had reached 700 battery swap stations as of this past December, so they're full bore on it. They can charge... they charge you a few $100 a month to lease a battery, and then you get up to 6 monthly swaps. Its swap stations are automated. They change the battery in 3 minutes. Partly the reason they can do that is the government of China set a national EV battery swap standard and partnered with companies to develop the stations. So the government is involved in encouraging it. You may wonder why other governments haven't done the same. The challenges to this system are logistical and financial. You would need a lot more batteries than cars to make this work on a widespread basis. You need a good logistical plan so that charged batteries are available at the right place when they're needed. You need a program for safety testing those batteries and to responsibly dispose of older batteries in the system. And to make sense, battery swapping also needs scale. And to get scale, it would be best if all the cars had a universal battery standard so that they could all take the same kind of battery, just like most vehicles can use the same kind of gasoline. That's a design constraint, though, and it's going to be difficult to get car manufacturers to agree to that. None of those are insurmountable problems, but the question is whether there's a big enough payoff to make the effort to surmount them, as China is doing. Vehicle range right now is regularly in the 300-mile range, and it's going up. Charging times are around 20 minutes on a supercharger and getting closer to 15. Is the extra 15 to 20 minutes compelling enough to get enough customers enough of the time to want to do a battery swap when they might have to pay a few $100 a month to do it? One possibility might be for fleets. You have a swap station for all your trucks or all your ride-hailing service cars or some such thing in your own facility. You know exactly what your demand is. That simplifies a lot of things. In fact, that's a bet that a San Francisco company called Ample, which has 5 swap stations in partnership with Uber and Sally, is doing. But it looks like most car companies outside of China anyway, are betting that charging's just going to get good enough, and the cases where it would be worth it to do battery swaps are rare enough that it isn't worth pursuing at this point, even if it does work.
I'm not sure if it's not that it's not worth pursuing. It's just that the hill is very, very high.
Well, mounting the hill is not what's worth it. Not that doing it at all wouldn't be worth it. Yeah.
But you can still see the advantage of doing it, though, because there's a couple of things, right? It's difficult to rely on consumers, to properly dispose of batteries, or properly deal with battery maintenance issues. There is, the people who are commuting, they don't want to wait 20 minutes, right? I mean, it requires a lot of planning ahead to make sure your car is pre-charged and ready to go for your commute.
But if you're commute, aren't you doing it from home? So you're just charged overnight.
Theoretically, yeah. Again, consumers, right? So you have to assume they plugged your car in at night, which I guess a lot of people do.
Most of them do, but yeah,
so,
okay.
Yeah, so you know, if they can get the charge rates down to like 5 minutes, then that's competitive with pulling into a petrol station and filling your car up.
Yeah.
Right, so that's kind of the big thing.
What I hear from most EV owners is, I only worry about charging when I'm taking a road trip. Day to day, I'm charged overnight and I almost never have to deal with it.
Yeah, yeah. But then you do worry about it.
Yeah.
I mean, as somebody who has a, you know, I lease my current car. It's not an EV, so this wouldn't really apply to me. But let's say it was, to pay a little more per month for the, you know, the life of my lease, to say, yeah, if it gets to that point, I want a new battery. That, I think, is attractive to a lot of folks, because there's such a barrier to entry for so many people, being like, yeah, but what if I take that road trip? Sure, I don't do that every day, but what if I do? And I just don't want to get stuck, you know, on the side of the freeway for a while, and it kind of ruins everything. This would be a potentially great solution. But again, it does require a lot of batteries to be sitting around waiting for cars to need them, you know, and does that turn into sort of its own landfill?
Yeah.
Well, we have that problem now, though, right? So C-cell, B-cell, A-cell batteries, right? There's more batteries than there are devices that take those batteries.
Right.
That's currently an issue. Yeah, what I have an issue or concern about, I guess, is that the batteries that are used to power vehicles, they're dangerous. Right. And if a Tesla battery starts on fire, you can't put it out. You have to have a chemical that puts the thing out. So if you've got a reservoir of batteries sitting in a stop at the side of the road, and those all start going up, it's a problem.
Yeah. Right? So that kind of thing, and not that you can't deal with that safely. I mean, gasoline also can explode, sure, and we figured it out. But that's another one of those problems that would need to be solved.
Yeah.
That makes it go, well, maybe charging is good enough, especially because if it's mostly needed on road trips, a lot of times what I hear from EV owners is, on a road trip, I'm going to stop, go to the bathroom, get a bite to eat anyway. So the extra few minutes in there really doesn't show up, really doesn't annoy me that much. So,
yeah. I mean, like Sarah, I lease a car, and it gets me the fuel efficiency combined with the computer controlling the car. It's an Audi, and does all this stuff when I'm taking long road trips. I can get all the way down to Los Angeles on one tank from San Francisco, right?
Yeah, I can do that with my car too.
Yeah. And would I be annoyed on that trip if I had to stop twice, which is what you'd have to do in a Tesla? Maybe, I don't know, it's unclear.
If you regularly drive your EV from San Francisco to Los Angeles, send us an email. Feedback.
Yeah. Do you not need a bathroom break? If so, how are you an alien? Yeah.
Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com. Please do. No, seriously.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit.
If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
All right. In Q1 of its earnings, Apple reported the largest single quarter of revenue, up 11% on the year with earnings of $2.10 per share, both beating analyst estimates. So it was a good quarter for Apple. Every product category except iPad saw growth. Mac sales were up 25% on the year, followed by services up 24%. iPhone revenue grew 9%. And CEO Tim Cook said that supply issues were improving, with chip supply on legacy nodes still the biggest issue. So how about that transition to service revenue? Because we've been talking about this for some time, Apple wanting to be more of a services company. Well, that made up less than 16% of Apple's overall revenue. So still a small chunk, but not insignificant and growing. Apple reports that it has 785 million paying subscribers in total across all the services it offers, up 165 million over last year. So a good growth jump. Getting subscribers is helped by having people who use Apple devices. We talk about this all the time. The walled garden. The active Apple install base grew by 150 million devices to 1.65 billion devices. Apple's services segment includes the App Store, iCloud, and Apple TV Plus, as well as music and news and games, fitness, payment, and other services. So you might ask, okay, how is Apple TV Plus doing since Apple doesn't break out those numbers specifically? Well, Apple was a little cagey about this, but CEO Tim Cook focused on the number of awards and nominations that Apple TV Plus's programming slate has enjoyed. 200 award wins and more than 890 nominations. I don't know how you would get that many nominations. Probably some award shows I've never heard of.
A lot of Emmys, a lot of weird Emmy categories, I guess.
So, but rather than, you know, focusing on viewership or subscriber numbers, Cook mentioned, you know, popular feature films, The Tragedy of Macbeth, for example, or Coda, Swan Song, threw in some plugs for upcoming series Severance, The After Party. And in response to an analyst's question about, well, okay, where is Apple TV Plus going? Would it, for example, want to acquire a studio? You know, where's the growth going to come from going forward? Cook said, we don't make purely financial decisions about the content. We try to find great content that has a reason for being. Cook went on to say, and this is a quote, we love shows like Ted Lasso and several of the other shows. He couldn't remember any of those. We have a reason for existing and that may have a good message and may make people feel better at the end of it. But I don't feel we've narrowed our universe of things that we're selecting from. There's plenty to pick from out there, and I think we're doing a pretty good job of it as we speak.
So, that was very Hollywood-y of Cook. It's like he spent time in Hollywood for that statement. I'm not going to comment on the hardware. You know, see my previous comment about Sonos, even if the silo is big, big siloed companies drive me crazy. But the content thing is interesting because they have... failed kind of spectacularly at services in the past, right? It's you know, Apple Maps is, it's getting, it's better than it ever was.
It's been a long road for Apple.
It's been
Put it that way.
Ah, I see what you did there. you know, and their ability to deal with, you know, iCloud and the rest of it, it's just been, they don't know how to deal with the internet. But this is an area that they could probably succeed in. I mean, going to 16% from zero is a pretty good number, I got to say. And it probably, I haven't looked at the charts, but I'm sure it corresponds to the fact, to the timing when they opened it up. Because it used to be you could only get Apple TV on the Apple device, the Apple TV device. Mm-hmm. And they opened it up, and now you can get it on Chromecast and Amazon Fire and every, you know, all the other stuff. And that probably resulted in explosive growth.
Yeah. That and Apple One bundling stuff, I think, probably helped too.
Right? Yeah, I absolutely. Yeah, the same is probably true of Apple Music. I don't use that either, but I know that the numbers there have increased as well. So that strategy, I think, is paying off. As to whether they're going to buy a studio or not, I mean, Amazon did it, and you know, but Netflix hasn't, right? Netflix, I mean, they have their own internal studios that they built themselves, but I don't think they've acquired any studios.
Yeah, they've acquired content, like Miller World,
correct.
You know, but yeah, they haven't acquired a studio the way we think of, you know, yeah, the way correct. Amazon wants to acquire yeah. MGM, for instance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think people misinterpret Apple's strategy, and I think that's what Tim Cook was dancing around, which is we want to make really good shows, and right now we're not worried about competing with Netflix. What we want to have are really good shows that we can point to and say, hey, if you're in our service universe, that's we've right. got Ted Lasso, you know, we've got Tom Hanks in movies. They also want you to watch Netflix on Apple TV as well. They'd prefer it if Netflix offered their subscription through the App Store so that they could take 30% of it. And I think that's really what they want, is they want to take a cut of everything. They want to offer channels and all of that. And Apple TV Plus is always going to be a little bit of a loss leader to that, I think.
They're doing it now. Like, I was surprised. Like, I started watching Apple TV. What's the device called? What's the service called? Apple TV is the
Apple TV, and Apple TV Plus is the service.
Yes. Okay. So I started watching Apple TV Plus because of Ted Lasso and Foundation and a few other, the Mythic Quest and a few other things on there that I like. And the quality of the production is extremely high. Like it is.
You know,
they've done a really, really nice job with it. They have a long way to go to catch up to, you know, Netflix and HBO Max and some of the other and Hulu. Right. But if they continue pumping out content like that, that's great. But what I was surprised was they seem to be taking the route that Amazon's taking, where they've got a hub mm-hmm. of other providers. You yep. can subscribe to Showtime via Apple TV Plus, right? And all these other services, which, you know, I played with a little bit on Amazon and I found it very confusing. So I just go right to the content provider. You know, I get apps for, you know, I've got my own Showtime app and all that stuff, and I just use it that way. Because it's confusing when you're navigating. But you're right. They want to be the portal that everyone logs into, and they take a little piece of the pie as you go from Apple TV to Showtime or Apple TV to Stars or wherever else you're going to go.
Yeah, I think that is the plan. And whether it's as an add-on to Apple TV Plus or whether it's just an app that they're taking 30% on, maybe 15% of in Amazon's case. They just want a little cut of all that action. All right, let's check out the mailbags here.
Let's do it. By the way, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com is where to send an email that you want us to read, something that we've talked about on the show, something that sparks your interest that we might talk about on a future show, such as Andrew. Andrew wrote in and said, I have two things on the zero trust story from Thursday's show. Number one, there are already some widely used government-run zero trust systems, at least in the Department of Defense. Platform One has one, and I'm sure that there are others as cloud-based deployment and development gains popularity.
Cool.
Number two, standardization and interoperability between zero trust providers is not fully ironed out yet. I have to use a zero trust tool from vendor A at my job to access one set of networks, while another set of networks that currently runs on a VPN is transitioning to a zero trust app from vendor B. If the two are installed on my computer at the same time, it seems like neither will work. Huh. I'm a long tenured software engineer, and I don't really know why, says Andrew.
So good to get a little inside info on that. Thank you, Andrew, for sharing that. The plan is really good. The execution always is where the issues can crop up. There's an interesting article on TechDirt today about military folks using Signal, even though it's officially against policy, because sometimes they don't have the official policy approved messaging app because they don't have a phone that has been issued that can run it. So there's always those workarounds out there.
Well, thanks to everybody who writes in. Thank you to you, Andrew, and everybody else who sends us email. Please keep it coming. It's always nice to get your thoughts. It makes our show better. We also would like to thank our brand new bosses. Got two of them today, Stacey Hall and Richard Terry. Both just started backing us on Patreon. Thank you, Stacey, and thank you, Richard. Also, thanks to you, Rob DeMillo, for being with us today. Always a pleasure to have you. Let folks know where they can keep up with what you do.
You big lug. You can find out everything I'm doing at About Me. So aboutme.com/Rob DeMillo. And of course, if you want to check out Skidmore, Orings, and Merrill, my friend, you can look at www.som.com and find out what we're doing.
Well, thanks for being with us again today. And a reminder for folks, you might be listening or watching live, but if you aren't, we are live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC. We have a lot of fun chatting in the back channels about everything we're doing. You can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. And we will be back Monday. I hope you all have a great weekend.
This week's episodes of Daily Tech News Show were created by the following people. Host, producer, and writer Tom Merritt. Host, producer, and writer Sarah Lane. Executive producer and booker Roger Chang. Producer, writer, and host Rich Straffolino. Video producer and Twitch producer Joe Kuntz. Associate producer Anthony Lemos. Spanish language host, writer, and producer Dan Campos. News host, writer, and producer Jen Cutter. Science correspondent Dr. Nikki Ackermans. Social media producer and moderator Zoe Detterding. Our mods, Beatmaster, WSkytus1, BioCow, Captain Kipper, Jack Shid, Steve Guadarrama, Paul Reese, Matthew J. Stevens, and J.D. Galloway. Mod and video hosting by Dan Christensen. Video feed by Sean Way. Music and art provided by Martin Bell, Dan Luders, Mustafa A., Acast, and Len Peralta. Live art performed by Len Peralta. Acast ad support from Trace Gaynor. Patreon support from Dylan Harari. Contributors for this week's shows include Scott Johnson and Justin Robert Young. Guests on this week's shows included J.J. Owen Stone, Owen J.J. Stone, O'Docta, and Rob DeMillo. And thanks to all our patrons who make the show possible.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Apologies, though, Doctor, for saying your name wrong in the credits.
You'll never hear the end of it, Tom.
I know. But I wouldn't, even if I'd gotten it right, so I guess it's fine.
You're supposed to remember everything all the time, don't you know?
Yeah,
I know.
Are you not perfect, human?
That's your job.
Folks, if you're watching live and you would like to get that wonderful DTNS beanie, aka skull cap, aka toque, Rob DeMillo is modeling it for us on the video right now. How's it feel, Rob?
It's great. Actually, I'm not making this up. I wear this thing almost every day.
It's comfy. I was wearing it the other day on the dog.
Very, very comfortable.
Yeah. You can go to dailytechnewsshow.com/store and buy one. And if you're watching us live, type cheese right now, all lowercase in the Twitch chat, and win a 20% discount code for the DTNS store. If you are selected after typing the word cheese, it'll be whispered to you on Twitch. It's valid for 1 week. So I hope everyone took their Lactaid because there's a lot of cheese in the chat room.
I was having an argument, not even kidding, with somebody earlier today.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? No, we were having an argument about cheese.
Oh.
Because so one of my favorite things in the world for a little snack, you know, let's say the 49ers are playing on Sunday. What am I going to do? I'm going to sit on the floor at the coffee table. I'm going to eat tortilla chips and salsa and have a little shredded cheese on top. So I mentioned that to a friend and he was like, cool. Yeah, whatever. Fine. You're making nachos. And I'm like, no, they're not nachos. Like nothing's heated. It's just cheese and salsa and, you know, really good thick chips. And he was like, what are you doing?
Wait, what kind of cheese is this?
Like just like shredded taco blend.
Okay, cheese. So it's not melted.
No, okay. It's not melted. All right.
But the it's not, and it's cold. Not a dip. You just got some cheese, some shredded cheese.
I mean, it's you could think of it as you're dipping it. It's more of a sprinkle.
I mean, like it's not like like that Cheese Whiz kind of dip where it's like.
Oh no! Like no, it's. I mean, taco blend is basically shredded Jack and cheddar.
Yeah, it's Jack and cheddar.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not,
but, you know,
liquidy.
Kind of finely.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like I could shred it myself, but I just tend to buy them.
Your argument is it doesn't become nachos until you stick it under the broiler.
Well, so he was just like, what? You're kidding. Like you're not melting the cheese? And I was like, cheese is good.
I mean,
unmelted.
It does feel a little bit like a missed opportunity, but if I'm lazy,
I don't know.
If I'm lazy,
I feel like it's like
I'm. Well, yeah. That's fine. I got no problem with it.
It's cheese.
I'm here to ask the hard hitting questions. Okay. All right, Sarah, do you use jalapenos? Do you put jalapenos on that?
Sometimes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I always have jalapenos in the fridge. That's a staple.
So they're out of a jar or can or something. They're sliced and ready to go, and they've been soaking in.
They're in a jar.
Pickled.
Okay.
Pickled jalapenos.
And yeah. And then, you know, if you have an avocado handy and you want to get crazy,
okay,
you know, you do a little av on the top.
A little av. So what you have, that's the most California thing I've ever heard you say. So what you have then is a deconstructed taco.
Well, and I'm like, it just tastes good. But my friend was like, I just can't believe, because we've talked about this, you know, sometimes over the years, we talk about food a lot, particularly cheese. He's like, I just can't believe you haven't been melting the chips in the oven with the cheese this whole time.
Oh, in the oven, please, please. We don't got time for that. Just eat up.
No. I don't know. Like, I don't feel it's weird at all.
Tell them you're
like,
being environmentally responsible.
You have unmelted cheese on like, sandwiches.
I'm not wasting energy, you know. With
there we go. That's the green angle.
Yeah.
You have to get the
green. These are green nachos.
There you go.
With
yeah.
a little olive on them.
And when people say, well, but what, you're going to like fill up every chip? Like where you have to like do the salsa and the cheese and maybe a little avocado and maybe jalapeno every time on every chip. And I'm like, that's what makes it fun.
Yeah. It's a different experience, folks.
It's a fun, like, you know, finger food.
It's deconstructed taco. That's perfectly fine.
Thank you. Right? I appreciate this because I was feeling like, you know, well, I guess I'm just really crazy this morning.
Listen, I've been there. Sometimes I'll like throw them in the microwave to melt the cheese, but sometimes I don't even have time for that. You just want to eat. No. Just want to eat the thing.
Yeah. Cold pizza, right. Also fine.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Just
I can't
depends.
Go there. Can't go there.
We just lost Rob.
Yeah, just lost me.
Rob says you've taken it too far.
I was with you right up to the cold pizza part, and I just can't do it. I can't do it. But what this has done though is told me what I'm going to do for dinner tonight,
which is
deconstruct a taco,
nachos and pizza,
deconstruct a taco. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. I'm telling you. I mean, it's a delight.
I think I have all the components.
It's a delight. Sure, including, it's not hot, but
including an avo. What did you call it? An avo? I've got an avo.
An av.
Av.
An av. An av. Yeah.
Yeah. AV.
If it's two, is it an
AV club?
Yeah. Are you an AV club, Rob?
I do have AV club.
You might be.
That's funny at the same time.
I like to put my cold pizza in the broiler and just like sit there for about 3 minutes.
No,
works.
Cold
sure,
pizza.
Nothing wrong with that.
You get a cast iron pan, a little olive oil, put cold pizza on there. 2 minutes.
I do that, but with olive oil.
Two minutes from when the pan has been heated.
What did I say? What did I say?
Is that two minutes after you've heated up the pan, or from
you
like
said
cold...
olive oil? But I was making an olive joke.
Oh, I see.
Avocado oil always good
thing.
For yeah. high heat tolerance.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
No, because olive oil actually has a very low smoke point.
Yes, no, you could change that to a yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Avocado oil, coconut oil.
Peanut oil is pretty good.
Algae
I'm incredibly hungry right now.
And cottonseed oil. Have you ever used cottonseed oil?
Sesame oil.
I think you're
oil.
Supposed to. Mm. I think cottonseed is kind of one of the bad oils.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
got cotton.
I just feel like I remember that. You know
what
I think it is? Because
like
when you hear hydrogenated cottonseed oil, everyone says, ooh, well, yeah, stay away.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's too much starch, Tom. So. Yeah. Sorry.
Let's pick a title for this show.
Yes.
Over at showbot.tv/DTNS2. I'll read off the top three vote getters. Thank you, everybody, for voting. We got some good votes. 46 DTNS votes, 62 GDI votes. Here are the top three vote getters, and then Roger will tell us which one we picked. Zoe Briggs Bacon, obvious versus non-obvious art. That's a good one.
Hmm.
Zoe Briggs Bacon also with Google Thought the People, and the people won.
Oh. Aww.
And
I
Larry
love it.
In Atlanta with Google actually listened to us.
We had to go with Larry in Atlanta's Google actually listened to us.
Yeah, it's a nice.
It was in the cold open.
Yeah, yeah. GDI top three vote getters. Zoe Briggs Bacon with "Put the cradle and the bathwater in the grave," which is literally something I said. So yeah, that's fair. Larry in Atlanta with "How many illegal space aliens do we have?"
Yeah.
And
let's do a little census.
And then Nth Mike with "A freezer just for pie."
The best we went ever. With Lion Jim videos. That's what an alien would say.
That one's good too.
Oh, I do like that one.
We also got some raises. Thank you, folks, for showing that you think we did a good job. Savage Bunny gave us a big old raise. Bill Johnson at SW Texas also gave us nice big raises. Thank you all. We appreciate you showing faith in the show. Also, thanks to everybody over on Twitch who's been supporting us there. We got new followers, Cam39028, J Valentine05, and Defiant Geek. Welcome to the club. Got bits from Zoe Brings Bacon and Aldi LDL. And Grest Uther resubscribed for the 30th month. Gave us the old thumbs up
emoji.
Name. Yeah.
I love that name.
Thank you. Thank you, Rob DeMillo. It was a pleasure having you back.
Oh, no. Thank you, Thomas Merritt. I appreciate it.
Good.
I like being here.
I'm glad you do. We like having you.
We like having you. Yeah.
It's all cozy.
Come back early and often.
Until Monday, everyone, please have 3 good days.
Yes, including today.
Consecutively or just...
Well, 3 good 24-hour periods.
You know what? Work it out how you need to. Yeah,
whatever
just have
you need. Make sure they're good.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.